Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. I think it's fair to say that we haven't heard so many tortured metaphors since the healthcare reform debate, as we've heard about this oil gusher down under the Gulf of Mexico.
That's saying a lot, because tortured metaphors were, you know.
Well, it's an open bleed there. We tried to get a sense of the scale of it yesterday. We were calculating all afternoon. It's the equivalent each day of 30 tanker trucks, oil tanker trucks, big tanker trucks per day poured into the Gulf, which, depending on how you look at it, seems sort of small to me. I mean, it's hard to get a sense of the scale, but the fact that this is going 24/7 and is continuing to form a huge slick in the Gulf is really the nature of the environmental disaster and hasn't really toned down the urgency at all for BP people. There are, in fact, 500 people or more deployed in a suburban Houston office building to troubleshoot, brainstorm, monitor, and somehow fix the Deepwater Horizon oil leak that is still gushing at this hour. Welcome back, Philip Johnson, professor of civil engineering at the University of Alabama. Good morning, Philip.
Good morning.
And Eric Gundlach joins us. He's an independent oil spill consultant who's speaking with us from New Paltz, New York. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
So we talked about Red Adair, who was this famous wildcatter who would come in and fix these blowouts and fires traditionally. He actually put out most of the fires that Saddam Hussein set after the first Gulf War. Is that part of your business nowadays, sort of an independent consultant who comes in and works magic, Eric Gundlach?
I don't deal with the blowouts. I deal with the oil spill and the oil spill response, so the equipment utilized and to get the best people and the best technology in the right spot.
And it all involves a special set of skills that you hope you don't need, but in disaster times, your phone rings off the hook, I suspect. Right, Eric?
Well, all my colleagues are down there, and unfortunately, I'm sitting in New Paltz, but doing other projects as well. I've got a job over in Saudi Arabia coming up next week.
Well, Philip Johnson, give me a sense of what it must be like in that hive, as they're calling it, in suburban Houston. 500 people trying to figure out what to do here. Have you ever encountered anything like this where a bunch of engineers are sitting around throwing ideas, they create simulations, somebody does the numbers? What would it be like to be in a place like that right now?
Oh, well, it's exciting and a little scary. I'm sure they're putting together teams for every one of the possible solutions they've got. They've got a team leader, and they're working like crazy on each of those solutions, reporting back frequently. And I'm sure there was an overarching meeting that figured out the possibilities and went through them one by one, picked the best to work on first.
Well, so that would argue that there's something of a dome group, a dome team. They must be having a pretty tough week. The 40-foot containment dome has failed, but they're using a smaller dome idea. Give me the status of that idea at this point, as far as you can understand it.
Well, my understanding is that they're going to use a tube-in-tube connector to the surface so that they can inject methanol and hot water down the inner tube and mix that with the oil that's returning up the outer tube. And that's actually a very good idea to try to suppress that hydrate growth and hydrate plugging. And I'm optimistic that they can get this to work.
So the methanol keeps the ice crystals from forming, which keeps the clog from happening, which means they can theoretically pump the oil out.
It's like putting antifreeze in.
And all right.
Mixes with the flow and suppresses the hydrate formation.
All right. So there must be a junk shot team as well. That's the group that said, all right, we got a bunch of spare tires. We got a bunch of golf balls. We're going to like blow them into the hole. Explain how this idea might have some weight to it.
Well, think about trying to strain orange juice through a strainer. And if you had pulp in it, the pulp would start to plug up the strainer.
Gotcha.
And that's a bridging material, and that's what they're trying to put in, is some bridging material that'll catch inside the various bends in the pipe or in the blowout preventer.
And let's shift to Eric to the actual cleanup idea. What are the oddball technological ideas that are being floated, literally, to clean up this oil spill?
Well, we've got a couple of things that are a little different. Number one, it seems like the hair collecting and putting it into nylon stockings and into sorbents is interesting. Again, it's people have the idea that, yes, this is something we can do to help out. So that's a little unusual.
All right, but one of our listeners actually called about that, and this is because basically the properties of animal and human hair is that they absorb enormous amounts of oil, something that maybe you understand between shampoos sometimes.
Well, I don't think they actually compare to the synthetic sorbents. They don't absorb that much. It adsorbs on the outside of the hair hair follicle, whereas the absorbents actually go into the fibers themselves. So a lot of times it's a good idea. However, in the practicality of putting out, there's over 1 million feet of boom, and including sorbents out there now. It's a manufacturing thing. So there just isn't enough hair and manufacturing to go around where there are these synthetics available.
Well, that gives you a sense of the scale of what's going on. And there's even talk of a manufacturing issue with getting enough boom material from the synthetic manufacturers. Talk to me about this idea that was floated yesterday of creating a barrier island to block the oil, huge sandbags down in the Gulf. Could that actually work?
I think the sandbags were going to be plugging narrow channels. So the narrow channels where the oil could get in, that may be a good idea. With all these ideas of man intervention into marshes or into the shoreline, there always has to be caution about the erosion that could be caused. And if you have troops out there putting in sandbags or manpower, you're stomping in the mud. Oil comes in, you've got a mixture, and now you have to remove these sandbags later,
right,
all of which can cause potential problems.
I guess the motto would be there, biologically speaking, first do no harm. Eric Grundlach is an independent oil spill consultant, waiting for the call up there in New Paltz, New York, with plenty of work over in the Persian Gulf. Philip Johnson, are you confident that this group, even given the fact that Red Adair is no longer with us, can actually handle this?
I think that they're going to come up with a solution before that relief well gets finished. I do believe they'll get it shut in. I think there's some options because of that riser pipe that's lying on the ground that wouldn't be there in a normal blowout. I hope I'm not overly optimistic.
And the idea you like the best before we go is blowing the pipe closed, right?
I'm sorry, I missed your question.
Well, you in talking to one of our producers yesterday, you said you love the idea of actually putting some explosives around that pipe and blowing it closed.
Yeah, the guy that did explosive crimping years ago, and showed it worked.
All right, well, any idea can work, at least will be considered. Philip Johnson's professor of civil engineering at the University of Alabama, taking a look at that oil gusher underneath the Gulf of Mexico. Thanks.